Hello, and welcome back to the Book Marketing Tips and Author Success Podcast. This is Penny Sansevieri with Amy Cornell. And I have to tell you, I'm always so excited when we get feedback, show feedback. We're getting so many new listeners, which I think we just got another, somebody else just reviewed the podcast today, which we check obviously religiously for new reviews. So thank you so much to all of you. Welcome to all you new listeners. And thank you so much for reviewing, because we love reviews. We check them all the time. So this topic comes up a lot. And I think that the cornerstone of any successful book campaign is not just what you're doing, but how you're doing it, in that many authors struggle with writing a book pitch. I mean, you and I, Amy, you and I have both written pitches, and you write a lot of them too. And you see this not just in a book pitch that they send, but also like in the book description on Amazon, which I know we have a variety of shows on that topic.
Yeah, it's challenging. I mean, I think there's certainly the element of getting too close to your own work and, you know, not being able to put yourself fully in somebody else's shoes and how they process that. But it's also a very, you have to really get in the right headspace too. And you can't just imagine yourself as one ideal reader, right? If you want to be selling books and convincing people to click buy, you kind of have to come at it from a few different angles. And it does get kind of complex. I love doing that kind of work because that's, you know, how my brain, I like to run through those scenarios and come up with wording that really kind of hits home with different types of people. But it's definitely challenging. And it's almost like, and you know, it's like a muscle that you have to work at continually, and you get better at it the more you do it, for sure. And I think that's why it can be so challenging for authors too, because they release a book how often, and then they're supposed to come up with all this brilliant language, you know, after writing a whole book. And it's like, wow, more writing.
right. Exactly. And I think that so I had a conversation, and part of the reason that we wanted to really prioritize doing a show on this was I had a conversation with an author the other day, and they really struggled to tell me what their book was about. And I think that if you're struggling to tell somebody what your book is about, nothing about your book marketing is going to be easy, right?
So true.
So we did a show, I want to say it was last year, on elevator pitches and the importance of elevator pitches. And that is where it all starts. And one of the things that I think is, if you can come up with a really crafty, clever, you know, 1 to 2 sentence elevator pitch, everything else can be built off of that, right? And that is the cornerstone to any great book pitch. Not that that's not necessarily where we always start with our book pitches, because we're coming at this a little bit differently, both from expertise, but also we're not as close to your project, obviously, as you are, as the author is. But the elevator pitch helps you to really clarify what your book is about, which I know sounds kind of crazy. When I talk to authors about their book, a lot of times they struggle to tell me what it's about, because there's a bunch of different threads going on, right, in the story, which is, for fiction, obviously, is very typical. So you have this, you know, right? So Amy and I, we started this, just as an example, we started this book group with a text string that we're on, right? So we picked this book called Hidden Pictures. It's really, really, really good. And I was telling Amy this morning that the parents in this book really annoy me, right? They annoy me to no end. But the book is fantastic. But the fact that the parents annoy me is not necessary to the story. It's a story adjacent, as it were, right? So when we talk about different threads of a story, every fiction book in particular, and we'll address nonfiction in a second, has a lot of different threads going on. And that's very normal. Your book pitch, the core of your story, is what your story cannot be without, right? So in the case of Hidden Pictures, the story revolves around this little boy who is basically channeling drawings, right? So this that's kind of how this whole mystery develops. Without this kid, you basically don't have a story.
Right.
So think about, as you're thinking about this, as you're listening to this, think about what is the one element in your book that your story cannot be without. And if you say to me, Penny, but there are actually five elements, I'm going to come back and say, you're only allowed to have one. I mean, Amy, talk me, like I said, we're going to talk about the nonfiction in just a second, but talk me through what do you think about that?
No, I think that's very true. And that's honestly the majority of the work that we do when we help clients refine their book description, which especially, you know, as Penny said, for fiction, that makes up a lot of what you will be pitching. You know, you want to pitch what is unique and interesting and different about the storyline to a genre influencer. And a lot of what we end up doing is helping clients filter out exactly what you were saying, Penny. Like, there'll be something in the description. It's like, that's just distracting at this point because you know why it makes sense.
Right.
But the person reading it on the other end of, you know, the computer screen getting ready to buy it has no idea why that detail matters. And if anything, it can actually be distracting from convincing them to buy. You know, too much detail going onto too many different, as Penny said, threads about your storyline and things like that could actually end up killing that sale versus making that sale.
Right, exactly. And so I think that to start, and you know, one of the best ways to understand good book pitches is to look at other successful books on Amazon. And we said this in the elevator pitch podcast too. One of the best ways to learn how to write an elevator pitch is to edit other people's elevator pitches on their Amazon retail pages. And typically what I would recommend is go through like the top best-selling books, because those are probably going to have, I can almost guarantee you, they probably had the assistance of a copywriter, right? So maybe they're flawed, maybe they're not, but that will really show you what is the thing that really pulls you in. The book descriptions that really pull you in, they aren't weighed down with too many details, right? So the fact that the parents in this book annoy me is not mentioned in the book description, right? Not that it's not mentioned in the book description whatsoever, because it's not necessary to drive the story, right? So if you envision your story, your pitch like a car, who's actually sitting behind the wheel of this, right? And everything else, everybody else who sits in the car as part of the story, they're not front and center. They're not driving the story forward, right? Exactly. Now, if you've written nonfiction, this becomes a little bit easier, but it's still tricky because, Amy, we have had many times where we've worked with nonfiction authors who struggle to actually know how their book will benefit the reader, right?
Yeah, that is definitely one of the biggest challenges, because I think, again, it's too easy to get too close to your own work. So you're so hyper-focused on what you talk about, what you teach about, what you can advise on, and you're forgetting to think about what questions is your audience asking? What answers are they trying to find? And not that what you wrote and what they're looking for don't mesh, but you want to use the right language that makes that little light bulb go off in their head and going, they're talking to me, you know? Yes. So it's the difference between taking what you know and what you do well in your area of expertise, but make sure you're putting that into language that makes sense for the person on the buying end. And you're using language that they use in their own head, or, you know, that matches what they're searching for and things like that.
Right. Exactly. I think that is part of, so I was talking to an author the other day, and they said, you know, when I said, who is your reader audience? And they said to me, well, I want to go after the people who read the most. Right. And basically what that was saying is, I don't know who my readers are, but I want to target people who buy the most books. First off, that's not a recipe for success. So right there, I mean, that is an extremely flawed approach. You will end up throwing a ton of stuff at the wall and none of it will stick. But if you're trying to create a book pitch for everybody, I can guarantee you, you are not going to hit that target. So you have to become very focused on what your, who your actual audience is. So the other day I talked to two authors who have a very famous business who will go unmentioned, and they wrote a book about, you know, that was, had to do with this business. And normally when I'm having a conversation with authors who want to work with us and they have, you know, accumulated a lot of professional success, they will expect me to throw out things like, I'm going to get you on the Today Show, or mm-hmm. I'm going to get you on Good Morning America, or I'm going to this. And the authors right off the bat said, we know that that is not our audience. We know they are so clear on who their audience is. Our audience is, they don't watch these shows. They listen to podcasts. They follow influencers. And they were very, very, very clear. And I think that you have to spend, if you can spend some time focusing on who your ideal reader is. And I realize we bang this drum a lot. And if you've listened to this podcast for the last 3 years that we've been doing it, you probably want to beat your head against what, like, oh my gosh, they never say anything different. But I'll tell you, this will save you a ton of money. It'll mm-hmm. save you a lot of money in terms of, you know, doing things that, you know, things that don't work versus the things that do work. Right. And what that will also do is it'll help you to really crystallize what your book pitch, both the tone of your book pitch, the highlights of your book pitch, and what you need to address. So what are the real benefits to the reader? And in particular, as we talked about, if you've written nonfiction, what does your reader at the end of the day really, really, really care about?
Yeah. And you know what I've noticed, Penny, that's interesting between fiction and nonfiction. And I'm glad that we're talking about how there are similarities, but it's also a very different animal depending on what you've written. Because a lot of times I notice, so say you start with a really good synopsis of your book. You know, a lot of times for fiction, that means taking away some details that make it more intriguing, more, you know, that leads some cliffhangers in there that make people want to find out more. Whereas with nonfiction, you start with a clear synopsis and you almost always have to add more to that.
Yeah.
You know, how can you drive those really important points home even further? A lot of times that means bulleted lists, using bolding, things like that. So it's like, you really have to, like you said, know your audience, know who you're pitching to, write a really good synopsis of your book based on those people, and then fine tune it from there, one direction or the other. And it's amazing how often fiction ends up having to pull some things, you know, to keep the people on the hook to say, like, I have to figure this out. I have to get this book because I want to know what happens. And then nonfiction, you have to add more because you really have to drive home that what you've created is better than the 3, 4, 5, 10 other versions of your book that they already have on their shelf that they think didn't work, you know?
Well, right. And again, and in particular for nonfiction, I think that, you know, there's a saying that goes, there are no new ideas. There are only, you know, unique spins on existing ideas. And to some extent, I think that's true. I mean, I think 5 years ago, I don't know if anybody would have written a book on ChatGPT. Now it's hard to open up Amazon without seeing 50 of them show up in your search feed. But there are, you know, if there is a problem out there, if you're struggling with something or you need to learn how to cook something or whatever it is, there's probably a book for that. So you have to remember that what's your unique selling proposition? What's your USP? What is the thing that makes your book so unique? And that's the first thing that I will ask anybody that has a nonfiction book that I'm on the phone with. How is your book different from the 500 books out there? And, or the 5,000 books out there or whatever,
yeah.
Right? You have to be able to crystallize that and know, and the challenge for a lot of authors, I think, with that statement is, we always come from a place of ego. Like, well, my book is better because it's better. Well, I get it. But I need to know how it's better. You have to tell me specifically how this book is. If you can't just say my book is better because it's better, that doesn't count. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, absolutely.
And I think that you have to, and, you know, reading other books in your market and reading other, like you mentioned, reading other book descriptions and that kind of thing will really help you to sort of define where your book fits in and help you weave that into a book pitch. The other thing that I recommend doing is read the reviews on other similar competitors on Amazon and see what readers are saying, like maybe what they missed, and you may read that and think, oh my gosh, I addressed that in my book. Mm-hmm. And that could be something that becomes your anchor.
Yes, absolutely.
And Amy, you also talk a little bit about, you have a great tip, and we've talked about this before, but it's worth mentioning again. Reading your pitch out loud.
Yes. Isn't that cool?
I love that.
I know. And it's something that, you know, honestly, I read out loud to myself a lot when I'm writing things, because your brain knows what you want to say. But when you read it out loud, sometimes you catch yourself, you're like, that could be better. Or, you know what I mean? There's just something about reading something out loud versus letting your brain run on autopilot. So it's like, why don't we share that more with authors too? Because it's like, I do it. I read it in somewhere else as well. And I'm like, why do we not talk about this more? But yeah, reading your pitch out loud, you can even record yourself just on your phone or whatever and listen back to it. You know, you could pitch to a friend. I know it sounds funny and maybe, you know, like, oh, I don't know, I'm a little weirded out by that. Do it. You know, call a friend, ask if you can give them your book pitch and ask them for their feedback. But there is really something about speaking what you want to convey and seeing how that lands and making it a better written pitch for the person on the receiving end when you send it out.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's not always, I mean, we always say that you want somebody, you know, your friends and your neighbors and your family will all say, oh, of course we love your book. We love your book. And it's not so much about getting your friends' feedback when you're reading it on the phone to them, but when you read it, when you read it aloud, not just to yourself, but to somebody else, the perception of what you've written does change. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that, like, even Amy and Amy, one of the things I really respect about her is Amy will tell me flat out, like, that's a really stupid idea. I mean, she's nicer than that, but like, she'll tell me flat out. She's like, oh my God, Penny, really? Are you serious? But I will sometimes, like, I will read something or like, I'm thinking about doing, you know, like this for my book or this for whatever, a pitch or something. And I'll read it aloud. And just the act of reading it aloud to her, I hear it. And I'm like, oh, there's something wrong with this. And I don't know what it is, but I have to go back to the drawing board. That is a tremendously helpful tool. And people are like, people who do lots of speaking talk mm-hmm. about, you know, that's also really helpful before you get on a stage or something like that. But for your pitch, it's really good. And then,
right.
You know,
and,
oh, go ahead. No.
I was going to say, there's also a lot to be said about the fact that, and this is something that when you work in marketing and advertising and things like that, the writing is often very different because the brain, you don't want the brain to work too hard. You don't want people to spend too much time thinking about what you're trying to convey to them. So a lot of times speaking something out loud reminds you to write the way people speak and communicate, because I think that's very important too. I mean, even the difference, Penny, I notice sometimes between saying it is and it's, depending on the tempo and the flow and the tone of what you're saying, it is versus it's can make such a big difference. Mm-hmm. Or the person on the receiving end when they're, you know, trying to process what you're giving them. And so even small details like that can really change their first experience with your product.
Exactly. And I think it's worth mentioning too, that we know that, and even though I just got done saying that, you know, you want to make sure that you're not putting too many details in your pitch that distracts from what the pitch is about, there is an element of putting things in that will not only pique the interest of the reader, but using it is versus it's also slows the brain down a little bit. right? So it feels faster than it is. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And there are times where you want to slow people down and have them kind of marinate on that one sentence that's really supposed to be the kicker. Other times you want them to get through it because part of the pacing of them reading that adds to the whole theme and vibe of what you have going on for, with your book and your storyline and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think that, you know, hopefully your takeaway from this is that it's not impossible to write a book pitch. It starts with your elevator pitch. So definitely go back and find that show. Because we actually took some examples. We had people write in. So we did some live elevator pitch feedback on the show, but definitely go back and listen to that one. Read other author websites, check other books on Amazon, see how their book description is written, and really look at it with a critical eye and see what resonates with you and what kind of, you know, almost pulls you out of the story and where you get distracted. Because as soon as the mind gets bored, it's going to look for something else. And that's where, in particular on Amazon retail pages, that's what Amazon's kind of zeroes in on. That's why these pages are intentionally so distracting. So you really have to keep a very focused pitch and then practice and have a few of them that you feel like maybe different versions of them, right? Because a lot of times, like when we're pitching to influencers or media or something, we will have different pitches for different angles or different areas. Like a pitch to a parent is going to look different than a pitch to maybe, you know, a school or, you know what I mean? I mean, it's going to have a different vibe to it.
Yes, absolutely.
So, well, I hope that this has been helpful. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Penny Sansevieri and Amy Cornell. And once again, I just want to mention, we sound like we're begging for reviews, but we really aren't. We love reviews.
Are we? I think we might be.
I'd be begging for reviews. That's so funny. We should get like little sandwich boards and walk around and say, we'll do a podcast for review.
I'll put them on my kids.
There you go. There you go. And your dogs.
Yeah.
Anyway, we love reviews wherever you listen to podcasts. We also love show ideas. So by all means, write us with your show ideas, or if you're having a problem that you want to solve that maybe we can help unpack on the show, we'd love to do that. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for tuning in. Bye-bye.